This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dan Chenock. He's Executive Director, Center for Business of Government at IBM. Dan, how are you today?
I'm great, John. Thanks a lot.
My, IBM. What a storied company. You know, back when I started in this business, they told me IBM stood for inexpensively built in Mexico. I guess it doesn't, does it?
Not at all.
I guess the new one is maybe I've been moved. Is that the other one,
no,
too?
No, that's off a well-remarked acronym, but not that either.
Yeah. Well, I think if you think about information technology, how can you not start with IBM and maybe end up with IBM? And I saw a review in a magazine with this strange picture of this guy named Dan. I figured, let's bring him in here. Turns out that he's been in the studio at Federal News Radio more than I have. But we're going to try to maybe go off on some different topics and maybe open up the world of IBM to some of our federal listeners and maybe provide some information for our listeners that they didn't know that IBM has, or maybe point them to some white papers or maybe case studies that they may be able to solve some problems they have in this crazy world of federal information technology. Well, Dan, maybe you can start off by giving us a little bit about your background and how you wound up at IBM.
Sure. Thanks, John. I worked in the federal government for about 15 years, joined actually on the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment, which no longer is around, in the mid-80s for a couple of years. And then after graduate school, joined the Office of Management and Budget, spent the first 10 years there as a regulatory analyst and manager in the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. And then the last about 4.5 years as the branch chief for information policy and technology, which at the time was the senior career civil service job in IT policy and IT budgeting. The job is now largely similar to the job that the deputy federal chief information officer has, currently Lisa Schlosser. Mm-hmm. And at the end of my career at OMB, I was essentially dual-hatted to be the deputy to the first Administrator for Electronic Government, Mark Foreman, and then Karen Evans before I left. After spending that time at OMB, I decided that I'd like to try to see what the other side was like, and went out to look for jobs in industry and ended up
both sides of the coin here.
Absolutely,
wow, yeah.
Ended up at SRA International, which was a great company headed by Rennie Diapentima, a phenomenal CEO.
Everyone knows him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Phenomenal CIO and CEO of the company, and joined a number of other ex-CIOs there. Learned a lot about business for the 4 years that I was there, and then went to run a P&L, a civilian agency business at a company called Pragmatics.
Interesting.
Where we had a good growth record at the time I was there. Terrific company. And then a little over 2 years ago, IBM came and asked if I would be interested in running their technology strategy practice, which basically is a front-end strategic consultancy within the company, does a lot of cloud, social media, how to put together technology as part of a strategic plan for a business or a government organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then IBM also has something called the Center for the Business of Government within its public sector consulting group, which is essentially a think tank for the public sector. It does a lot of research and recommendations for how to improve government and exchange of information with government leaders, including on Federal News Radio and a variety of other channels, to try to help leverage expertise to improve government. And I currently run that center and have enjoyed doing that for the last several months.
Sounds like you deal with a lot of smart people, huh?
I have the good fortune to have worked with many people who have hopefully rubbed off on me well.
You know, when I was up at NIST, I sat in a room and I think I was the only guy there who didn't have a PhD. I mean, this is, you know, people don't realize that. There's some certain areas of the government where you walk in a room and you really are the dumbest guy in the room. I'm sure that's true with the IBM Center as well.
Sure, absolutely. And you mentioned NIST. One of the other roles that I play is I chair NIST's advisory board for security and privacy under the statute, the FISMA statute, the Federal Information Security Management Act. It charters a FACA committee, an advisory committee of experts on security and privacy that advises NIST and OMB and the Congress
FISMA,
on those issues.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I chair that board.
We had the folks on and we promoted SCAP, ASCAP.
Sure.
And it's coming up on October 3rd. In fact, we got them in here and we said, go to that conference October 3rd. And we promoted and pushed it and pushed it. And I think that interview is going to air maybe a week before the conference. And it's a real good way to promote the idea. I mean, I'm a big promoter of standards and NIST and Ron Ross and whatever they do up there. I try to get behind. Sometimes I don't understand everything. It's too tricky for me. But I think they've done a whole lot of work. I think if you want to just think about eliminating redundancy, well, just start with this. I mean, just that alone can save millions of dollars, I think.
Absolutely.
The correct standards.
Yep. The SCAP program is a terrific example of the good work of many people at NIST. Ron is one of their leaders.
And I think it's a good indication of partnering with private businesses, because at SCAP in Baltimore, there's going to be a ton of private companies there as well. And so finally, and when I look at your background, it's, you know, line staff, it's public-private. So you have this balance as well. So you're kind of the public-private guy, because you can see the perspective from a government contract and the perspective from a government, how they can work together to achieve some of these things. So now you're at IBM, you kind of all the fruit of all those years of hard work, you can recommend and give suggestions for people to do reports or do investigations.
Sure. And I think much of what the government does, it does through partners in industry or through nonprofit organizations or state and local governments. And there's a large community of stakeholders that really, if they work well together, can improve the efficiency and effectiveness of how the government operates. And if you think about it that way as a sort of ecosystem of players, you realize that there's a lot more levers to be played in different ways to deliver public services.
You're probably the guy at the meeting that says, have you ever thought of this angle? And then the people in the room are going to go, well, that's because you worked in the federal government for 20 years. Then the other end of the table, have you ever thought of this angle? Well, that's because you've been at SAIC or whatever it happens for 20 years. And old Dan is like, he's both sides and getting them all together in order to achieve the purpose. That's good. I wrote down Lisa. I'm a big fan of Lisa's. And Lisa used to teach at Georgetown at the technology management program. And she got this promotion. She said, I'm working 16-hour days. I can't do it anymore. She just is really, really aggressive, hard driving. Wow. She just is, she's really, really a good human being. The students all talk about her still. I go, wow, Lisa was just hitting the ball out of the park every night.
Absolutely.
And she's just, really strong reputation. It's just,
yep.
I was amazed.
I'm a big fan of Lisa's as well. And I was really happy to see her take that job. She was also on the NIST board.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Chair, and we've worked together over the years, so I'm really, really happy to see her doing so well at OMB.
Now, the real test is you get her in front of a room of 25 real smart young students, and can she hold her own, and can she talk the talk, and the students there, I teach over there now, and I talk to a lot of them, and they remember her really distinctly, and they say, wow, they really helped. She helped them in their career because she could sit with someone and go, no, that, you know, think about this. And these kids would get the degree and they get promoted and then move on. So she has a lot of seeds that she planted over Georgetown that are going to come to fruition in a few years. And there's going to be even a bigger Lisa fan club.
Terrific. Well, I'm glad you have a Georgetown connection. My brother's a Georgetown graduate, so we have that in common as well.
Yeah, good. So if you write in a piece of paper what the Center for Business and Government does at IBM, I guess, you know, one sentence would be connecting research to practice. Is that a few enough words? Does that boil it down?
I would say research to practice to recommendations for improvement. Research to practice is how we do what we do. And then recommendations for improving government is hopefully the result of the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. And so the work you would do would be recommending studies to be done, maybe surveys or longitudinal studies?
We don't get into longitudinal studies from a statistical perspective for the most part. Our work, the studies that we fund, and we fund about 20 studies a year roughly, mostly by academics, but some by nonprofits, some by consultants, basically do some empirical research, usually of extant data as opposed to creating a new survey research a project, and then they apply that research to a particular analytical approach to a problem that government's facing or an issue that government needs to know more about, and then ends with a set of practical recommendations that government decision makers can hopefully take and make a better, more informed approach to a particular issue.
It sounds very practical.
It is, and it's a way that IBM can also take advantage of the larger community and learn from the best minds in academia and in industry to basically create a frame of reference for the government and for the work that we do with government so that we make sure that we're providing the highest value.
Now, when you started describing that, I started thinking of mobile devices and this big influx of mobile devices and my listeners and are trying to figure out what policy they should use, and they're so trapped up in the new iPhone and the new iPad, the new this, new that, they can't step back and try to look at it from a logical perspective. And maybe what IBM can do is they can detach themselves, study it, and then reattach and say, here's the best practice for managing mobile devices or whatever. Let's take a quick break. We can come back, talk more about IBM. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Dan Chenock, Executive Director, Center for the Business of Government at IBM. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Dan Chenock, Executive Director, Center for the Business of Government at IBM. So what your center does is it's almost kind of like an academic institution that kind of removes itself and it looks for best practices in a wide variety of situations that can improve general business function of the government writ large.
That's correct. We look at things like acquisition, performance management, financial management, information technology. Increasingly recently, we've been looking at security and intelligence and solutions that will improve operations in that area. So we do take a wide lens. Our stadium that we live in is all about management and leadership and all of the issues that government managers and leaders deal with and the stakeholders that work with those government managers and leadership leaders deal with.
And so the end result is not a recommendation for a specific process or a specific product. The recommendation is, well, if you have to manage mobile devices, here's 10 ways that we've found are efficient for your size organization. Would that be a
correct? That's right.
Like
and
that?
Here's things to think about. Here's things to watch out for. Things to think about in terms of BYOD, bring your own device. How to maximize the integration of mobile platforms in your organization, how to help your workforce understand how to use them more effectively, things like that.
Well, there are some topics here that aren't exactly light-duty topics, and if IBM is going to cover improving healthcare and then also transforming the workforce, I mean, improving healthcare, that just alone, that's like a monster. That's like two mountains on your shoulders. Okay, let's talk about improving healthcare. Well, coming back about 3 hours when we try to focus in on one part of that. So do you focus on different parts or let's take that topic, healthcare. How do you slice it and dice that?
So the center's involvement in healthcare has been more through a technology lens and how technology helps improve the operation of health provision in the government sector. We took a look, one of our reports took a look at telemedicine and how telemedicine can improve service to rural and frontier areas. Another report looked at wireless technology and how wireless technology improves monitoring of chronic diseases. And you might think about that as people who use internet-enabled medical devices and so that hospitals and providers can track their progress regardless of where they are and how to think about integrating that into a government management and information system and address the security and privacy issues properly, all of the things to do to bring the technology into the business of government more effectively to serve citizens more productively.
You know, if you take that general concept, improving healthcare, then you get real specific on it. My son has a friend who just got back from Afghanistan. He's injured and he's living in rural Montana. Okay, that's the problem. Okay, now what IBM can say is, well, here's the best principles for managing him effectively, improving care, and doing it in an economical fashion. It may be telemedicine. That may be the solution or a recommended solution.
Sure, that's the kind of thing that our center, the Center for the Business of Government, will talk about. And then we'll say, once you decide that that's the best way to do it, How do you deliver that service most effectively and most efficiently? And how do you integrate that service into the rest of your program and make sure that as a manager or a leader, you're thinking about your program or set of programs as a portfolio to be invested most effectively? So you think about all the things you do as a leader to make the government work more effectively and efficiently. And how do you help this program while still improving your broader portfolio?
If you take a topic like collaborating across boundaries, well, I think this is an issue that large organizations have. I think Exxon has that problem. I think Progressive Insurance has that problem. The American Medical Association has that problem. And guess what? Probably the people at Department of Interior have that problem too, because there's a wide geographic range. And if the goal from the White House is to collaborate, how can that best be done? And how can you collaborate on acquisition? And what's the best practice for Interior? Is that the best practice for Commerce? What about DOD? And there's another whole concept there. I mean, collaboration is very difficult. I think just within my little world of software development and modular software development, getting four or five software developers to collaborate in a project, that can require some nudging.
Absolutely. Collaboration is really something that has always been a management goal. And especially in the government, collaboration isn't just a way for like practitioners to get together to improve their understanding of best practice. It's also a way to deliver citizen services more effectively from the citizen's perspective, because if you're a student and you're getting student financial aid, you're getting it from education. If you're a nursing student, you might be getting loans from VA or from HHS if you're dealing with a veterans hospital. And having the government collaborate more effectively in that case can help the citizen who's getting services from multiple agencies. At the same time, if from a software development perspective, as you said, technology allows for basically group development in a modular way so that developers can get together on open source platforms or platform as a service approaches. And our center might take a look at those approaches and say, what's the best practice in industry, taking platform as a service as an example, and how can we apply that to a CIO's world so they can implement it most effectively?
There's another area that you folks work in called transforming the workforce. It's very interesting. I teach a class with a bunch of 25-year-olds in it. And the first day of class, I said, I want a WordPress blog in 2 weeks. And then I didn't say anything else. And 2 weeks later, guess what? All 20 of them had a WordPress blog, and it was working. It was great. And now what I tell my friends is that if I had a group of 65-year-olds in that room and said, put up a WordPress blog, they'd want to go to the library and get out a book and how to do WordPress, and they'd be all frustrated and confusing. It would take 2 months. It's just, I think, you know, the new workforce almost expects electronic health records. They almost expect telemedicine. Why? Because that's how they've always done things, and why shouldn't it be? So I think this transformation can be difficult with you know, the baby boomers retiring.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think about the workplace that my children, who are teenagers and somewhat below, will come into, and they have no concept of not being able to go online, collaborate, get the answer. And I think about my teenage daughter, who often is on several different chats, and she's got multiple things going on the screen, and she's got lots of different ways to collaborate. And I'm working on now on a conference where we're thinking about how to apply this to the workforce of today and the knowledge workforce. This is the Industry Advisory Council's Executive Leadership Conference, and there's a knowledge workforce track, which is really taking these issues and saying, how do you apply these vast advances in technology, collaboration technology, et cetera, and make the government more effective as a coalition of people working together?
Yeah, think of a mid-level manager in the federal government. Her boss is 65 and retires, and she has a bunch of 25-year-olds. So she has to be able to bridge both gaps, you know, me, the geezer world, something on paper, and then the 25-year-old who why shouldn't I have an electronic health record?
Absolutely.
You'd have to defend why you shouldn't rather than explaining it to someone else. And I think, you know, I think that intellectually, I think emotionally, psychologically, that is that's a tough thing for a mid-level manager to do, but they're going to have to do it in order to move up.
Absolutely. And especially because the policy world is focused on protecting the integrity of that individual record. And there are a series of statutes, especially the HIPAA statute in the healthcare world, designed to limit exposure of that information. So creating a way to share that information has to respect all of those security and privacy protocols that you build around it. Technology can go so far and can create new ways to do that, but understanding governance and understanding how people work together more effectively, especially in a multi-generational environment, is something that is a challenge.
And I don't want to go hammer on my folks at NIST, but I think a good cheap way to do it is to everyone sit together in the room and figure out what a common way to achieve this is. And all of a sudden, well, you know, the way to comply with HIPAA and use an iPad is X, Y, and Z. Well, if everyone agrees to that, then all of a sudden we don't have 5 years of fighting over standards. I mean, what was the FDDIC, after desktops run computers for 10 years, the federal government came up with a standard form? I mean, you can't do that with mobile devices. They're coming out too fast.
Sure, the FDCC, Federal Desktop Core Configuration,
came out in 2007 after the desktops were all deployed.
But I think you're on to something in terms of getting a group of people together, a broad group of stakeholders together to move a policy forward, takes the best of a process that creates collaborative policymaking, like negotiated rulemaking, and puts it into real time. And it may be the way that in the future we develop policy and we can expand that conversation through social media to basically involve people who maybe aren't in the room. And so I think you'll see more and more collaborative policy development to try to solve problems in that way.
Like, a good example would be the SCAP conference in Baltimore on October 3rd. Not that we're promoting it or anything, but this is where you get divergent opinions in the room. A lot of people agree, a lot of people disagree, but NIST participates and has big ears and small mouth and tries to gather information in order to make the decisions, I guess, in a collaborative process that is easier for my kids than for me, because they just assume it. They wouldn't even consider not. And mm-hmm. I'm one of the few people, I guess, who watches television anymore, because no one under 30 watches TV, which is another big whole modality change for me. Let's take a break. When we come back, talk a little bit more about social media and maybe some social media blogs that you read or you can suggest for our listeners. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, you have Dan Chinnock, Executive Director, Center for the Business of Government at IBM. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, you have Dan Chinnock, Executive Director, Center for the Business of Government at IBM. And what the center does is they kind of act like a kind of a mini academic world where they sit back and they try to take a look at problems that high-level government executives face, and they try to come up with best practices for solving some of these problems. Where if you're in the middle of a boat and you're bailing 16 hours a day, you don't have time to figure out if it's quicker for two people to bail or one person to bail or what. So you guys have the time to sit back. And I think that's what a lot of my listeners are in, you know. They come to work every day, they put on their bicycle helmet, and they beat their head against the wall, and they go home because they're bombarded with new regulations and new changes and new technology. And oh, by the way, there's new people as well. And how do you graft someone into the federal government? And you folks take a look at, you know, what's the best practices for someone who's new to the government. That's really interesting, isn't it?
Sure, it's absolutely interesting. And we learn a lot from our authors, who are the ones who really provide a lot of the expertise in breaking new ground on these issues. Our reports come out probably once or twice a month, and they get a lot of play in the government. We also provide a resource for government leaders to have a conversation with their constituents, and we do that through our magazine, through our radio show here at Federal News Radio that we do weekly as well, and through our website increasingly, through our blogging and our tweets and our appearances at events and roundtables and speaking around town and at conferences.
I was trying to extend this metaphor of someone bailing a boat. So if you're in a rowboat and you're bailing, and then you look a boat over and there's a guy in the boat bailing as well, and, well, what's he? Oh, guess what? He's got some different technique that might work better. And so in the federal government, there may be silos of information between agencies, and what you may be able to do, because you're not a government agency, it's like a meta tag, how you can come in with meta information that would apply to all of them and say, no, don't bail. Here's what you do. Just balance the boat or whatever happened.
Sure. I think that's an excellent metaphor.
Bailing the boat. I've had several experiences with bailing boats, so I think about that a lot. I have a blog. You can find my blog. You type in Armature John Gilroy, and up pops my blog. I'll be blogging about this interview. Is there a blog that you have, or can you recommend for my listeners some good one?
So the center has a blog, and I blog on the center's blog. It's at businessofgovernment.org. Mm-hmm. And we typically focus on particular timely issues. We also blog on the reports that we're releasing. We'll be releasing one on Monday around sustainability, best practices in sustainability for the government. We intermix those blogs with blogs on particular topics. For example, on the Government Performance and Results Act, my colleague John Kamensky, who was here appearing on Federal News Radio earlier today, in fact, has written a series of blogs on GPRA. I tend to write about technology acquisition, and regulation, which are my areas of substantive expertise. We have Gadi Ben-Yehuda, who's actually our Director of Innovation and Social Media, who blogs on those topics. Frank Strickland, who is a senior fellow who focuses on security, power, and intelligence in a 21st century international engagement where warfare is much different than the traditional model. So we cover a wide variety of spectrum from the blogs that we do at the center.
I saw some of the guests you had on the radio show here. One was Francis Collins. Now, Francis Collins is like, I think he's, you know, on the mountaintop here. I mean, that is a very smart guy. Have you ever heard that? I don't know if you heard that interview with him, but
absolutely.
He has quite a range of intellectual ability that whenever I hear him speak, I'm just stunned at how someone can have that deep a knowledge of such a wide range of information when it comes to healthcare and ethics, really, and ethics too. And oh, by the way, he's good at ethics too, and he can go on and on. And that's interesting that IBM would bring someone like him on the air and ask him opinion, because I am certain that listeners may be in situations where they have ethical questions about certain activities that, you know, where does it fall? What's legal? What's not legal? What's ethical? What's not ethical? And it gets to be kind of interesting where someone with that perspective can come in and maybe help you overcome the burden or figure out a better way to solve a problem.
Absolutely. And Francis Collins is an example of a great leader in the government. And one of the things that we try to do is, from the information that he can impart, draw out lessons that can benefit other leaders. We have a report coming out that will compare and contrast lessons learned from Francis Collins' experience with those from Secretary Robert Gates at the Defense Department, and that will try to then generalize in the defense and civilian settings leadership models that can lead to better result.
You know, when I look at the federal landscape of leaders that are out there and people who are really powerful and strong, I think of Roger Baker and I think of Francis Collins. And look at those two persons, and if I could listen to an interview with either one of those persons for an hour or come back to it and read a blog, you know, whatever you're thinking, whatever kind of situation you're in, I'm thinking it's got to forced to have a new perspective and, you know, maybe we can solve the problem this way. What would Roger Baker do? Well, he was sick of mobile devices being lost, so he mandated that they're all encrypted, just like that, bang. Now there's no problem over there anymore. Well, that was a pretty simple mandate and it worked, but it did work. I don't see anything in the Washington Post about any VA stuff getting lost, do you? It doesn't have it anymore. And it says that it's good to get that perspective in there.
Absolutely, and I've had the good fortune of working with Roger since he was the CIO at the Commerce Department in the late 1990s, and he's also worked in industry since then, in between his stints as CIO. And Roger brings a great perspective to issues and a different perspective. He looks at issues a different way, and it's very refreshing, and he's very effective at implementing that.
It's interesting that some of the things that are going in the VA, I mean, I read a statistic where the VA had this little initiative called the Blue Button, and they figured, well, geez, maybe if we have 20,000 people, we'll be able to be successful. And here it is, end of August, they have 1 million people. And now, you know, private organizations are embracing Blue Button as well. And so here we have the VA who, you know, maybe someone in Kansas or in Topeka or they wouldn't really know much about them if they're not involved in the military. Now they're becoming thought leaders in a very critical area of healthcare IT that can, guess what, give better care and reduce cost. Well, it's interesting how innovations can flow from the federal government to save money for people in Oregon or Texas.
Absolutely. The VA, especially in the medical arena, is really a cutting-edge provider in many ways, especially in electronic medical records. The Blue Button Initiative is now serving as a model of one of the five Presidential Innovation Fellows projects, countenanced by the White House Chief Technology Officer, to move forward. And also the VA worked with industry a couple of years ago to think about how to modernize its coding of medical software around the VISTA project, the VISTA modernization project, where it said, we don't know everything. Let's hear from industry how to do this most effectively. And industry came back and through a report that was well received in the VA, made some suggestions that have been implemented.
Did you say collaborating across borders? There's the theme again. Come, you know, 20 minutes ago, we talked about that. The borders were commercial success in areas of interoperability, and the VA was open-minded enough to welcome people in the room and say, well, tell me, what do you think? That's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think especially in the DOD, there's some people there that they're pretty strong-willed. Managing finances and budget is also another area that you work in. So that's not your specialty. Who writes on that? Or was there a blog on that one?
Although I should have added budget, because being from OMB, you tend to speak budget all the time. So we do address financial management issues. In fact, my predecessor, the the previous executive director at the center, who was also an OMB alum, Jonathan Bruhl, was one of the authors of several financial statutes in the government, including the CFO Act. And he's left a legacy for us to continue in terms of understanding financial management. We often work with the Association of Government Accountants or other financial organizations. We work with the financial leaders in the government, including Danny Werfel, the OMB controller, and various chief financial officers in the agencies, and try to identify and elucidate best practices from the private sector and how they can apply to government.
So managing finances and budget should be kind of your in your wheelhouse, because that's where you started off.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I've talked to the folks. I think the Association for Government Accountants is in Old Town Alexandria. And I've talked with them about some compliance issues they have and some certification issues. When you look at the big picture and back years ago when you started OMB and now, I think one obvious big change is this concept of transparency and blogs, where 20 years ago, well, there were no blogs 20 years ago, but you know, even if there were blogs, they wouldn't be as willing to be transparent about a lot of activities that took place. But there's a mindset going on right now as far as transparency goes.
Absolutely. And I had the good fortune of being on the transition team when President Obama was elected in 2008 and was the leader of the technology and government group at that time. And we talked a lot about transparency, and that helped to pave the way for the president's issuance of the Open Government Directive. And I think you've seen a lot of activity in this administration around openness and transparency, a lot of progress that's been made. There's still a lot of progress to be made. Much of what the government does is open and should be available to the public. Some of what the government does is not and should be handled accordingly, whether it's sensitive medical, financial information, or national security information. And understanding how to protect that information that needs to be done in closed quarters while maximizing the vast public benefit of most of the government's information is a continuing challenge.
Filters, yeah, the appropriate filters. Let's take a break when we come back, talk more about Twitter and social media, and maybe do a little tech survey. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dan Chenock, Executive Director, Center for the Business of Government at IBM. Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dan Chenock, who is the Executive Director, Center for the Business of Government at IBM. We've been talking about all kinds of high-level, sophisticated topics. I want to kind of bring it down to earth and get more practical and talk about Twitter. Very practical. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. Do you have a Twitter handle, Dan, or is it someone you use or follow?
Sure. It's at dchenok, D-C-H-E-N-O-K.
Okay. I will start following tonight and see what you have. A lot of people starting to put pictures up, and it's what's fascinating is that if you are interested in cybersecurity, you can just follow the top 10 leaders and just learn everything about it. Or
sure.
Whatever topic you have, you know, whether you're a Giants fan, you can follow everything about the New York Giants. I mean, it's great for very detailed, specific interest. But IBM has had these big, massive, huge, big problems like improving performance. I don't know if there's a Twitter category for that, is there?
Absolutely. There's
there
a hashtag performance all over the place. And we at the center all do a lot of tweeting, and we have a Twitter presence at CBG and at Business of Government are two of our handles. I do a lot. I follow a number of leaders in the technology and good government space, and have basically learn a lot from them and from the press outlets that post information on Twitter. So I'm an active user.
You know, I never even thought of following Roger Baker or Francis Collins. I mean, I should, because I like those guys. I didn't connect the dots. Why would Francis Collins lower himself to tweet when he's lofty thoughts and big brain cells working? But he must have a Twitter account too, wouldn't he? I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't look at that, but it's a good thing to look into.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. When you get the naturals like Todd Park, of course he tweets. I mean, that's just like, it's well, of course he did, because that's part and part. Anish Chopra, another one I follow, because that's just part mm-hmm. of his DNA. I think he was born tweeting before Twitter. So it's kind of figured out that way. What I do with all my guests, mandatory, here's my tech survey. It's the Nerdometer survey. And what I do is I take my results, put them in my UNIVAC computer, and print them out on Greenbar, and I put them in the U.S. mail to you. So here's the 10 questions. Dan, the year you bought your first computer.
So I'm going to give a two-part answer. In 1983, I bought a computer for my girlfriend.
That was very noble of you.
It was an Apple. It was an early Apple. In 1988, I bought my first computer that I used for myself.
Well, I'm going to give you credit for 83. You know, that was a good deal. And those were expensive back then. Those are the days of $4,000 personal computers, you remember? Mm-hmm. Interesting. You're your first cell phone?
I think that it was roughly 1997 or so.
Late adopter. You lose points there. And you have a Twitter feed, yes. And you have a blog, yes. Do you use any online personal backup?
No.
Most of the security folks say that immediately. It's interesting. That's a test question. I see to see what kind of security paranoia they have. I see you've learned some lessons, haven't you?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yep.
How's that between the lines? What flavor smartphone do you have?
BlackBerry.
BB. My. This is interesting. More security there. A number of apps, but you don't have apps in the BlackBerry, do you?
Well, there are apps. There are apps for BlackBerry, absolutely.
I never realized that. Mm-hmm. And what kind of tablet device do you have?
We have an iPad, and we have a Nook in the house for a reader.
So this we, that's like, you know, we should paint the house, we should plant the garage, we should wash the car, one of those we's, huh?
Yeah, these are family devices.
I understand the we. Mm-hmm. You know, John, we should paint the living room. I understand that we. Social networking sites you participate in?
All the usual ones, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter.
Not Foursquare, if that's usual.
Not Foursquare.
And here's the big kicker. The last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Paper.
Me too. Well, I'll put this into my UNIVAC, and we'll come up with a very sophisticated analysis, and I'll print it out in the noisy printer in the basement. You remember those printers, those bar printers?
I do.
I can't believe how loud they were.
I do. Does it count if we just bought my daughter a Nook, and she's now reading on electronic?
No, it's you. It's funny. That's the same thing in my house, is that when I bring home a device like that, all of a sudden I don't have it, you know? I remember years ago I got the predecessor to the iPad. It was an Apple device for listening to music on. I had it in the house probably 30 seconds, and my kids took it. So it's like, I can't hold anything anymore. Well, Dan, you've seen inside and outside of the government. You've looked at it from all sides and both sides, and probably you're the correct one for me to hand the crystal ball to. And, here's a crystal ball. What's going to happen here in federal IT in the next 5 to 7 years? I mean, are we going to be 5 years from now waltzing through the halls and not see any desktop computers? Are we going to be waltzing through halls and all the employees are – no, they're teleworking. They're all at home commuting in. It's all hoteling. You know, 5 years ago, I couldn't have predicted the iPad. I couldn't have predicted mobile devices. There are mobile devices out there, but they weren't prevalent. I mean, now they're everywhere. So where's all this technology? Desktop computers, where's that heading? Where would someone from your IBM group, what would they think about desktops? Off with their heads?
So I think that the government tends to be a little behind where industry is in terms of their use and integration of automation and technology. It's also slow to change. The government has a lot of processes that are baked in to both the budget process and how programs are managed. So it tends to have a slower rate of change. And things like the innovation fellowships are ways that this administration are trying to drive change through more effectively and more quickly in different areas. I think that you'll see in the government more acceptance of mobile devices and bring your own device, BYOD. And I think that the security industry will develop solutions that will enable those devices to be operated more effectively and more securely, with greater data protection emphasis and greater authentication. So you'll have devices where, for example, on a single device, you'll be able to authenticate differently within the device and basically segregate or separate the functionality of the device, so that you don't have the mixture of personal applications and business applications that might be considered a security risk today.
Because you may have a smartphone now and have pictures of your puppy and your next-door neighbor's kids and your kids, and you may have organization information on it, too. You may have, and so who owns the information and who can do the remote wipe? And
right.
So what is the technology that will allow administrator to do a remote wipe on somebody's machine who loses it? And, oh, by the way, don't touch any of their personal. That gets to be kind of tricky.
Yep, and I think technology will evolve to create multiple persona, if you will, on a single device more effectively, so you can do the wipe of business information because you authenticate to it properly, and there's a machine-to-machine authentication that understands it's that part of the device, of the memory on that device, that you're looking to wipe and not the personal applications.
Persona, of course, in Latin means mask, as we all know. And that's an interesting concept. I mean, that takes that ancient, that classical concept and applies it to the new world here. And you can have a persona on your machine that is your federal persona that can be controlled remotely. And you can, separate from that, have your real world, your uncle and your aunt and your cousins coming in for the visit and sharing photos down and taking a look at the pandas and everything else. That's an interesting, and I never thought of using persona in that way, but that's really actually probably more authentic use of that word in the world of technology. It's your persona on your phone is right there, and the government can have access to that and control it, but you have your own privacy as well. That's a balance there.
Yep, and I think it creates, as you think about the identity management perspective and how identity management is applied to different devices, in the government, we've thought about the problem of identities more as an engineering problem and how do we think about authentication and encryption and digital signatures. And we haven't thought about how do you actually create a different mechanism to operate transactions and learn exchange information on particular devices. And authentication and the identity management work that's going on now, for example, in the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, I think in a few years you'll see a lot of solutions that will enable this type of technology to be implemented more effectively.
Which seems to be the trend. I read a blog by a gentleman who just hates Google, hates everything about Google, but reluctantly admits and says, well, they're making a concession to security with two-factor authentication, and good for them. They've figured it out. I mean, you know, it is a step in the right direction, and I think the commercial organizations have to reluctantly make the step. Now, people like Roger Baker, you know, that's in the rearview mirror. It's like, oh, yeah, that you know, let's get to serious problems. But not everyone's Roger Baker. Not everyone is that advanced. And guess what? There's commercial organizations that wouldn't even dream of doing the stuff that Roger Baker's forced through over there.
Sure, and I think Vivek Kundra, the previous federal chief information officer, talked a lot about bringing the government to where the people are. And it's creating that use case of you don't have to create government applications and then pull people to them because you can build applications in a manner that links in with how people operate online every day. And BYOD is one example. Creating a linkage with commercial services is another example. And I think you'll see security solutions evolving in that way. And forward-thinking leaders like Roger Baker, Steve Van Roekel, the current federal chief information officer, and others will continue to drive in that direction.
And maybe lead commercial organizations, maybe collaborate with commercial organizations, or at least sit down at the table with other groups and ask in order to move together in a scrum collaboratively. And go back to use case, which of course is from software development, which my software developers use all the time.
Absolutely.
We're going to have to end our interview here, unfortunately. Wish we could go on. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Dan Chenick, Executive Director, Center for the Business of Government at IBM. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.